We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Fill her up!
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
Conceive, believe, achieve. Shut the fuck up.
You're listening to Believe You Me with Michael the Count Bisbing.
You know my name yet?
And Anthony Lionheart Smith.
I am tired today.
Me too.
It's almost like I'm in training camp, but I'm not in training camp. You are though, so I can't speak about being tired. How is training going, Anthony?
It's going good. It's going really good, man. I feel really good. I'm in really good shape. And I'm feeling sharp. We got a real game plan that's really coming together that works for me. And I'm excited. I'm really excited. I feel really good.
Good, good. You sent us some inside info on training camp, which we won't divulge, but You're feeling good. Cardio is the main thing. So kill it for these last 2 weeks, brother. UFC 301. No change on the main event. Not that that's a bad main event. Pantoja is a phenomenal fighter. Steve Ursaig, 3 wins in a row. Last time, a stunning knockout. But still, it's still looking like that from your inside info?
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. Sounds like the main card is set. I like Pantoja. I like watching him fight. And I think that, I know like the Ursaig-Pantoja fight isn't that, I don't know, that really big name, you know? But I think it's a great fight. I think Ursaig is really good.
Yeah, yeah. And Pantoja is so exciting. He really is. It got me thinking, though, is that like one of the quickest ascensions to fighting for the belt ever? You know,
it's got to be.
It's got to be. So I did some research. Ronda Rousey got a UFC title fight on her debut. So That was quicker.
Well, she got a title without fighting.
Oh, no, that's right. She did. She was given it before she signed. Okay, yeah, so that was disqualified then. We had Anderson Silva got it after beating Chris Leben on his second fight.
Yeah, yeah.
Brock Lesnar was quick. I think third fight. Lost to Frank, beat Randy, then fought.
I think he fought Frank again. No, wait. Didn't he beat Randy for the title?
Yeah, he beat Randy for the title. Yeah, of course. What am I thinking? What are some other ones carrying on?
He fought that. He fought Mir, then another guy, then Mir again. I think.
I've got the list that I did right here. But Harrington, go ahead and talk.
Well, I was going to say Jiří Procházka was very quick.
Jiří Procházka was quick. Okay, here's the five that I wrote down: Brock Lesnar at 5, Holly Holm at 4, 281 days. Quinton Rampage Jackson at 2. One win over Marvin Eastman.
Yep.
The Beastman. And then he knocked out Chuck Liddell in stunning fashion. Number one, Anderson Silva after beating Chris Weidman. But anyway, that's not what we're here to talk about. Welcome to the show, everybody. Big show planned, of course. Anthony Smith with us. We have also Armin Sarukian from UFC 300. He'll be joining us in about 20 minutes or so. So I never saw it, but I saw the highlights. I'm talking about Ryan Garcia, Devin Haney. Did you watch it, Anthony?
I watched the first 3 rounds and then just the highlights.
Yeah, yeah. I saw the highlights. I know Garcia.
I was at a wedding.
Oh, we're going to get to that. I can't wait for you to tell that story. In fact, fuck it. Never mind Ryan Garcia. Give us the lowdown on this. You're not going to believe this, people.
There we go. Come on. Lost my ears. So I leave here. I go to Denver, or I'm in Denver, and I'm telling my wife, like, oh, maybe I should just fly home and just spend the weekend with the kids. If you're going to this wedding, just have a good time, and I'll just see you on Sunday. So, of course, she does the wife thing, talks me into going to Arizona, which actually turned out to be really good because, you know, Javier Torres, right?
I think so, yeah.
So Javier trains a couple big UFC heavyweights. So I went and drove an hour on Saturday morning at like 7 and went and trained with those guys, had an awesome training session. So I'm glad I went. I'll make the long story shorter, but there's a bunch of drama going on during this wedding, right? And the bride, she's a wonderful, very, very sweet lady, like really awesome person. Groom turns out to be some huge fucking piece of shit. And he's treating her like shit. He leaves her at the rehearsal dinner. Then he's like not going to show up to the wedding because of some bullshit argument they had. Long story short, he shows up, starts trashing everyone. Him and his brother are talking shit to all the bridesmaids, calling them whores, talking shit to my wife. Me and all the other husbands show up angry, like about to fight everybody. And then they end up calling the wedding off. So a half hour after it was supposed to start, her poor dad had to go out there and announce to 150 people that this wedding isn't happening.
Oh my God. I mean,
it was beautiful too. Everything was so set up. It was like at this winery. It was sad.
And but it turns out like $100,000 wedding.
It was like a $100,000 wedding. Yeah.
Number one, that's a ridiculous amount of money to just waste like that. Why do you think, I mean, listen, if they're going to get married, and we're not going to dissect their relationship because they're friends of yours, but you brought it up, not me. Do you think subconsciously that he was doing that on purpose? Because that's what it sounds like. Because if she's going to marry him, I'm assuming he had some endearing qualities going into this.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think that he sabotaged it a little bit and just doing some controlling shit. But I think she already had questions about it, like was already kind of having some second thoughts. And then once all of her friends and family are there, I think she kind of had like a tribe of people that were sticking up for her, being like, you don't have to do this. And I think she had gave her the courage to say, no, I'm not doing this shit. And I think it worked out for the best, to be honest with you. With all the stuff that's come out afterwards, it sounds like best case, I think she dodged a bullet, but that's kind of like the shit you see in movies, you know?
No, it is. But you know what? It takes a lot of courage to do that.
We had a lot of fun though. Afterwards, like her dad said, he's on the microphone and said, you guys can stay. We're still going to have a party. And so like we had food at the reception and hung out. The DJ played music. Most of his family and friends left, but we all stayed.
Yeah. So the dad's like, listen, the food and booze, that's paid for. So we're going to be consuming that. But I was going to say that actually takes a lot of courage to do that because, you know, if, you know, you set the wheels in motion, you pay for everything, you book the DJ, you get the food, you do the rehearsals, you do all of that stuff.
Bachelorette party. Like, I mean,
bachelorette party.
Hair, makeup, dresses, everything.
And then at the last minute to say, do you know what? Actually, this isn't right. This isn't for me. And I feel like a lot of people... I mean, I'm not speaking from experience. I have one experience that shall remain nameless, and that isn't my wedding. But a lot of people would just go through with it. You know what I mean? Because it's too late. The wheels are set in motion. Everyone's here. Somebody invested. I know, they pulled the plug at the last minute. Family had flown in and all the rest of it. And whilst initially everybody was very angry, in hindsight, looking back, it was like, well, do you know what? If that's truly how you felt and you didn't want to get married, then you did the right thing. Yeah, there was heartbreak, there was tears, there was wasted flights and wasted money. But you don't want to marry somebody and pledge an allegiance to them and till death do us part.
Yeah.
You don't feel like that.
And that's how it felt afterwards. Like, I don't think anybody was really mad because he was being such a piece of shit the whole day and like the way that everyone's seen him treat her. Like, he did that in front of everybody. So I think everyone was kind of like, yeah, fuck him. Let's not do this. Let's just party and you don't have to do this shit. Like, so instead of everyone being angry and upset, everyone was sad because it's always sad, you know, like you have this incredible day that's supposed to be planned and supposed to be this huge thing for her and ends up being the shit show. Like, of course you're sad for her, but also like, yeah, fuck it. Like, I think that it worked out for the best. She had a lot of support. She looked relieved, to be honest with you, the whole time. Like,
are you married, Anthony? Or are you just... living together. You married?
Yeah. Yeah.
What year did you get married?
2020.
Okay. Big deal? So, big wedding? Or
Yeah. We had a big wedding. Like 300 people. It was awesome. Like, that's what I kept comparing it to. Like, the whole time we were there, like, this sucks for her because my wedding day and like the rehearsal and like, you know, the couple days before your friends come in and everyone you know, they're sleeping on couches and they're hanging out, and then you could do the rehearsal dinner, and then everyone parties after that. Then you get married, then you party after that. I did get thrown out of a bar on my wedding night though. So it ended not great, but it was like a great 3 or 4 days. Like we had a blast the whole time. It was so much fun.
I'll be honest. I don't think I could invite 300 people to a wedding if my life depended on it. I don't think I could pull. I mean, I could go through the contacts on my phone, but I'm not sure how many of them would show up. 300 people. That's a lot of people at a wedding. That's a pricey wedding.
It was big.
As well.
Yeah, it was big. It was big. Yeah. Well, we've been together for, we got married on our 9-year anniversary. So we've been together for a while anyways.
Yeah, we're going to Costa Rica. I mentioned it on another show. I'm not sure if you were on, for our 25-year anniversary. Wow. But 25 years of getting together, not 25 years of marriage. 10-year wedding anniversary, 25 years together, the poor woman. I was just going to talk about Ryan Garcia there. Ryan Garcia, I was saying on the last show, maybe this guy was just pulling the ultimate troll move. You know what I mean? And just pulling the wool over everybody's eyes. And he misses weight, right? That was going to cost him $1.5 million in the little side bet that he had with Devin Haney. I don't know if he's going to pay that. $600,000 fine from the commission as well. So in essence, $2.1 million. Okay. Steps on the scale. He's downing a beer as he does it. And I'm like, I can't help but like this guy. Do you know what I'm saying? all the madness, all the crazy stuff, all the fucking shit out of his mind stuff that he was doing. I thought this isn't going to bode well for him. Then he shows up, puts on a ridiculous performance, drops him 3 or 4 times, I think it was, on the highlights anyway. Wins the fight, bets, I think it was $2 million on himself. So I think he won $20 million from the bookies. But he's not the champion of the world. And on the flip side, Devin Haney just lost a fight, but he's still the champion of the world. I mean, what a crazy mixture of emotions.
Yeah, I thought he was in a lot of danger just from the way that he was talking and the way he was acting. He was just being really goofy. He's always been kind of like this, you know, this young Mexican kid that's got a lot of swagger and big social media influence. Like he's the cool kid, you know, that everybody wants to be. And now he's like, I don't know. He turned into Tony Ferguson like overnight.
I don't know if he went that weird.
he just, I don't know. He just unapologetically did whatever he wanted to do, said whatever he wanted to say. Then he was like trying to rap and freestyle. And it was weird. But then he goes out and I was like, oh, wow, he looks better than he has in a long time. But maybe he's just been hiding this freakazoid that's been inside of him. And now he's just super happy because now he's just allowed to be this weirdo and just go and fight and train. He said, I beat you and I drink every day.
I don't. I drank and I smoked every day and I still beat you. I'll tell you what I did like. He had the orchestra in his dressing room playing nice, soothing classical music. And I thought, I like that. That's a cool touch. Mike Tyson came in, they had a little exchange and whatnot. That was good. Do you like a little classical music? I don't have you down as a classical music guy.
Yeah, definitely not pre-fight either.
No.
I don't know. I don't know if I get my blood pumping to that.
I love it, if I'm honest. I do love classical music. I know nothing about it. I just go to Spotify. I put classical on. It calms me when I'm driving. It calms me. And some of it's proper atmospheric. Look up Max Richter. I know you want Max Richter. He does like movie scores, you know, like music for movies and whatnot. It's some atmospheric.
See, I think it put me to sleep. If I was driving, it probably put me to sleep.
Oh no, it makes me want to go kill someone. Or just like zen and calm. And I'm okay, everything's good.
Well, you have to give it a shot then.
Do you ever find yourself having to do that? I've been doing that a lot lately. When I've been finishing my workouts in the garage, I just lie down, I turn the music off, I just lie there.
And I do it all the time.
Just let it go. Let the negativity go. Let the problems go. Life is good. We're blessed. Mm-hmm. I found doing that a lot helps.
I've been the last couple of training camps, I don't get to keep it super quiet because I'm still in the gym, but I find myself going up in like the octagon, like on the other side of the gym, and I just starfish my whole body flat on my back. And I think some of it is it helps my neck feel better. Like it's a little bit of a release, you know. But I just lay there and just kind of just take it all in. Mm. And it goes, not that I'm trying to be all motivational on you guys here, but it kind of goes back to what Mark Montoya and I have been talking about at this point in my career, that we're just focused on one fight at a time and not trying to look forward. I'm not trying to plan it all out, but I'm trying to just enjoy where my feet are. So then I just lay there, take in the practice a little bit. And then as I start to cool off finally and like start to try to stop sweating, then I'll just go and mingle with my training partners. We don't talk. I won't ask them anything about fighting. I'll just like, I realize like I don't learn enough about my training partners. Like, I don't know. We always end up talking about fighting or bullshit and all the things that are fight related are in this world. And so like, I've been trying to make it a point to go and like ask them about their families or like, what'd you do this weekend? Or I don't know. It sounds silly, but like, just trying to like,
yeah, it doesn't sound silly because that's the easy go-to, isn't it? I mean, and it's the obvious go-to, and it kind of drives me crazy because if I'm anywhere and like things not get awkward, but like, you know, the conversation's drying up a little bit, it always goes back to UFC, you know? Mm-hmm. And sometimes as much as I love the UFC and we do a podcast on it and it is a massive part of my life, it's like, I don't want to talk about it 24/7. I'm sure Dana White doesn't want to talk about every dinner he goes to, bloody the title fight coming up or what happened last time. You want to talk about life. You want to talk about relationships, what movie you've seen or whatever. And sometimes I'll be there with my mom and some, and like, say if someone comes up and they don't know the person, then all of a sudden it's just about flipping UFC. You know what I mean? Or my career as a fighter. So for you with the training partners, of course, that's an easy go-to. It's an easy go-to.
It's what always pops up. It's like you're worried about techniques and all. So I just been trying to just, I don't know, just be in the moment and just figure out what people have going on in their real lives. And it's been relaxing. It's been nice to just not always talk about fighting. I like it.
Well, good. Well, good. Because unfortunately for you, you're going to talk about fighting for about the next hour and a half.
That's fine.
We've got Armin Sarukian joining the show in just a minute. Hopefully we've got time for this one real quick though. Jamal Hill. And fair play to him, by the way. All these rumors or accusations or theories that Herb Dean stopping the fight was the reason he got caught. Jamal Hill came out. I forget the exact wording what he used. He's like, no, what are you talking about? I got caught. Simple as that. I had nothing to do with that. So I respect him for that. He's already booked a fight. He has booked another fight against your former opponent, Khalil Rountree Jr. Is that 3-3 International Fight Week? I believe it is.
It is.
June, what are we in now? End of April, May. So it's a relatively 2 months, call it. 2 month turnaround. I don't think, because for example, when Volkanovski got knocked out against Islam, people said it was a quick turnaround for Topuria. I didn't necessarily think it was. I don't think this is a quick turnaround for Jamal Hill. I think having the year out, not saying there was ring rust and certainly not making excuses for him, it's just good to get right back on that horse, you know, and just keep things going. But what's your take on that? And what's your take on the fight in general?
Well, I mean, realistically, if we're talking about world title fights, he kind of took this on a little bit short notice. Like he wasn't preparing to fight on that card and he didn't really have a whole shit ton of time in terms of getting ready for Alex Pereira at UFC 300. So I think it's good for him if he just jumps right back into it. Listen, Jamal's my friend, but let's address the elephant in the room. He tends to get pretty out of shape in between fights. So now he doesn't have that opportunity and he can just keep rolling on that. He was already in great shape and he can continue to build on that. He's already sharp. And I think he'll be much better after being in there for a little bit, getting that I don't want to say ring rust, but that you know what I'm talking about.
Unfamiliarity.
I can't say that word. I don't know why.
You know, that day when I've got the pronunciations down over you.
When he gets that out of the way, now he's been in there. He's felt the canvas under his feet. He's made the walk. He's done the media days. He's had the whole fight week. He cut the weight. And now he can just, now it's not unfamiliar anymore. Now he can just train, get back in there, do it again. And it's going to feel normal again. As far as the fight, I think it's a great fight. I think they're both going to struggle with each other a little bit because they're both southpaws. Jamal is crazy accurate and well-timed and hard to hit. Khalil's insanely fast. Even my coach, when he broke down the fight, he was like, listen, this guy's going to be really fast. I'm like, okay, well, I can deal with fast. And then when I got in there, I was like, oh, wow. Yeah, this is a problem. this is a big problem.
Yeah.
Especially like without the proper time to prepare. But with Jamal, he knows that. He's going to have the time to prepare for it. I don't think we're going to see a lot of grappling. So Jamal's by far the bigger fighter for sure. Probably the harder hitter. I think it's a great fight, though. It's good for both guys, too. Puts them both in great positions.
I think for Jamal as well, you know, not that I'm saying that he was cocky or underestimating Pereira at all. That's not what I'm saying. But getting finished the way that he did, with it being in round one, there's two answers to that. You can either take your ball and go home and cry about it and feel sorry for yourself, you know, or you can say, right, shit, wow, I didn't expect that. That was a shock. I've got to step shit up. I've got to train harder. I've got to research my opponents harder. I've got to respect the dangers coming at me more, you know, because essentially when you're undefeated, and I know he wasn't undefeated with the submission to Paul Craig, but, you know, that was kind of a weird scenario. It was a legitimate win, but he broke his arm and all the rest of it, and the referee stopped it. Mm-hmm. So I think in Jamal's mind, he still felt like he was undefeated. And when you're undefeated, you have this mindset where you're invincible. Because you fucking feel like that when you're knocking people out the way he knocked out Johnny Walker and Thiago Santos before that, you know, you feel unstoppable. Well, now, you know, you're not unstoppable. So therefore it makes you reassess a few things and raise or elevate your fight IQ and just respect the game at that next level. I'm not saying he wasn't respecting the game, but you've always got to be stepping it up, you know? So I think for that, I think we'll see Jamal come back as an even better version than what we saw before.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I think he's going to be better. I think he's going to be mentally sharper. And again, I have no inside information on what I'm about to say. I do think that I got a little bit of a different vibe the night of the fight from Jamal. And I think that he's such a strong-minded person that I think sometimes he overcompensates his nervousness with self-belief. And I think sometimes there's a fine line where you can teeter-totter between confident and a little bit of overconfidence. So I think, I don't want to say he was cocky or underestimated Pereira, but I think that he was a little bit nervous and then he just leans into a self-belief, which at times can get you in trouble. And then I don't suspect he'd do that again.
And that's what, I think that's a common trait. For people like Jamal, for people like me, for people like you, when you, because we all feel nerves, we all get scared, we all feel the pressure, you know, regardless of whatever it is in life. And then you go, right, shit, I'm not going to succumb to this. So I'm going to go the other way. I'm going to go the other way. And then you end up doing more damage to yourself in terms of what the outcome may be. So yeah, that's a good point. We have Arman Sarukyan joining us in just a minute. Earlier this morning, I was hoping he'd be on this show, but he couldn't make it because of the time, because he's in the Czech Republic. I am, of course, talking about the one and only Jiří Procházka. So the Jiří Procházka interview will be on the channel in a little bit. We were going to end this interview, but we didn't do that. Anthony, how dare you interrupt me?
No, I got a Jiří Procházka
story. I am in the comment section, people. He's an interrupting bastard. I am laying the foundation for the Jiří Procházka interview. The floor is yours.
I have a Jiří Procházka story. So
I want to hear it.
They had to pull me off the desk, right? Because I had a red eye flight. So I had to go make my flight and I had to go to the parking garage because I had left my car in that parking garage at New York for 2 days. So I went to the parking garage, go up the elevator. Now I can't find the goddamn car because I came into the garage a different way. Anyways, couldn't find it. So I'm on all these different floors trying to find this car. And I hear this banging. And the shaking. I'm like, what is that? And I look over by the elevator. Jiří Procházka is struggling with a pop machine. He cannot figure it. Like, he's fucking shaking and hitting the side of the... He just can't get this. I don't know what ended up happening, but I was there waiting on this elevator for like a good 3 or 4 minutes.
Hold on, what machine? You mean like for drinks and stuff?
Yeah, like a soda machine in the parking garage, like next to the elevator. He's just... he's so pissed. He's punching the side of it with like an open palm. And that went on for like 3 or 4 minutes, and I just had to get on the elevator. There's video footage of it somewhere because the camera people, like the embedded people, were still with him filming it, and he is fucking changing colors. He's getting so mad.
Oh God, that is hilarious. That's hilarious. You go out there, you win at UFC 300, you get a $300,000 bonus. Hey, but hey, I'm still hitting that parking lot vending machine. But the prices are good. The water bottles are cheap there. So Jiří, we spoke about all kinds of stuff, but one of the things that he did speak about, you probably saw it this week, is that never mind going up to heavyweight, He wants to get the belt back. He wants to fight Yuri. He wants to fight Alex Pereira right now. He said he doesn't care where it is, when it is. He's ready to go at a moment's notice. And when he becomes the champion and he's defended it once or twice, he wants to come down to 185. And Yuri's a big dude. But according to him, when I spoke to him, he said, no. He said, I don't cut weight at 205 whatsoever. So, and I found that quite surprising as well. So he feels that 185 is definitely doable. Says he doesn't cut weight, Anthony.
He's a liar. I like Yuri a lot. There's no way that's true. I've stood next to him before. There's no way.
He's a samurai, bro. He's Japanese.
His shoulders are.
He's a liar.
He's as tall as I am. His shoulders are wider and he's shredded. There's no way that guy just walks around at 205.
No, I know. Well, that's what I said. I said, dude, I've been in your company multiple times. Yeah, you're a no big way. Man, Yuri. You're a big man.
You didn't challenge him?
I did. I asked him. I said, and he said, no, for the weight cut, it's diet, no cut. Anyway, he said he can make 185, no problem. I said, bro, I said, that's going to be miserable. Just so you know, it's going to be shit. And he had a big smile on his face. Amosov Rukian should have been here on what time is it? 5 minutes ago.
Oh, man.
Is he going Hollywood on us?
He might have.
All right, this episode is sponsored by Chalk.com. That is CHOQ.com. And they specialize in all natural testosterone boosters. I say this every time I do this ad read, but it's so true. You go to the gym and you see people that just aren't making any kind of gains. They're not really getting the benefits they were looking for. And the reality is people are getting older. We're all getting older every day. And as you get older as a man, the testosterone starts to dip. So if you're not feeling the energy that you used to have, if you're not as focused, if you're not as driven, if you're getting a little bit flabbier, then you need to boost the testosterone. Every year, on average, when you hit a certain age, you lose 1% of your muscle mass every year. Right? So in 10 years, you've lost 10%. Muscle burns calories way quicker than just fat alone, of course. So the less muscle you have, the less calories you burn, the fatter you get. You've also going to have less of a libido as the testosterone drops. The testosterone, of course, is what makes men a man. Okay, so you want to give it a little boost and you want to do it in the natural way. And Chalk are proud to stand above the rest in clean, pure, and healthy products. They use full disclosure labeling as well, so you know exactly what you are putting into your body. Chalk Daily is the cleanest research-based testosterone booster available. And along with Chalk Daily, be sure to check out the Male Vitality Stack and the Stack Ultra. And be sure to use the code BISPING when you go to chalk.com because you're going to get 35% off. CHOQ.com, chalk.com, use the code BISPING, a whopping 35% off. One more time, chalk.com, promo code BISPING for 35% off.
You know what felt good today? I was going through the airport this morning and again, another one of these things that sounds silly, but I really enjoy it. I probably get people come up to me more so for like the ESPN stuff and this podcast. So I love it when I'm like going through the airport and like some random guy passes me. I see that he recognizes me, but he doesn't say anything until we get all the way past each other. And he goes, "Fuck you, Harrington."
Oh dear.
He didn't stop me. He didn't say anything. He just said, "Fuck you, Harrington." And then I just put my hand up and kept on walking. It was awesome.
I'm rightly so. And upon cue, we will bring Harrington into the fold. Harrington, how are you doing, my friend? In terms of a big mixed martial arts story, while we wait for Armin Saruki, and if he does in fact show up, and if he doesn't, Armin, I'm coming for you, brother. Just so you know, I ain't no punk bitch in the audience. Right, you can come at me all you want. You're 155er. I'm 185. In fact, I'm 220 these days. Come at me, bro. You do this, you mock me, you make a fool out of me. I have announced you on the show. Oh, love, I'm kidding. Whilst we wait for an apparent appearance from Armin Sarukian, we have a mixed martial arts story, please, Harrington? What is the biggest one in the notes you've got?
I mean, I think, you know, speaking of coming at people, speaking about setting records straight, I think Dana White did a better job of that than just about anyone when he released this video about everybody who's had anything to say about UFC. No, you don't think this is a big story?
No, do it. Yeah. Okay. I mean, I wouldn't say it's the biggest story we've got to talk about, but yes, yeah, sure. Go ahead and play.
I loved it.
What's up, guys? As we rolled into UFC 300, the MMA experts weighed in on what they thought of UFC 300. And for all the fighters that were on this card, when I said it's the greatest card ever assembled in the history of combat sports, this is what the media thought of you guys.
UFC 300.
First up, Brendan Schaub.
Is any fight on this card 300 worthy?
Hold on. No.
This is the most diabolically
Jesse on fire.
Announcement ever.
Jesse.
He called me about that.
Doesn't
of course
feel
he
like
did.
A combination of something.
And Helwani. Helwani should have been first.
Yeah, he's gonna knock your socks
who's Eric Jackman? MMA personality. He's like We're fucking watching paint dry.
I wanted my jaw to hit the fucking ground.
I did expect a little bit more from the company.
Brian Campbell. Anyway, the reason we can leave that one there, the reason being is because we've talked about how great UFC 300 was, Harrington. Not because I didn't want to play didn't want to talk about it, but we have talked about it, you know. But fair play to Dan. If you're going to come out and talk shit, you're allowed to have a little rebuttal, but
I got a question.
Not much of a conversation there, Harrington.
I got a question. Compilation.
Give me a question.
Because we obviously were fans of UFC 300, but we do a lot of different media and interviews, and we're on here a lot, and we say a lot of things. Was there any part of you when that was playing that was rolling in your Rolodex of shit that you said about the card, thinking, did I say anything negative? Like, in hoping to God you didn't find yourself on that reel?
I must admit, a lot of the time when I see headlines, that happens. But mm-hmm. I was like, no, I don't think so, because I've been very, very pro UFC 300. I thought the card was phenomenal. But I do know the phenomenon of which you speak. You know what I mean? I know that.
The only time I can think of anything that I was even remotely negative about was when the announcement came. I think I was like, oh, well, we already knew that fight was going to happen. At some point, we just didn't know when. So I was expecting like the, oh my God, I can't believe it's Brock Lesnar versus whoever, you know, like a fight that you weren't even considering. We end up getting one that we all kind of expected to happen at some point anyways. But then Jesse on Fire did call me and he was like, I was actually making fun of people that were making fun of UFC 300 in that clip. Like if, I was like, oh.
Yeah, right. No, he wasn't. No, Jesse's full of shit, man.
Is he?
Yes, he's not full of shit. He's a great guy. Like, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying he's full of shit in that regard. He was jumping on the bandwagon. He was hating on it big time.
I was so happy we weren't on there.
All he does is big up Jake Paul lately. Oh my God, Jesse, I love you, brother. You got to take Jake Paul's nuts out of your goddamn mouth.
He's been pretty critical of Jake Paul. I don't know why he's on his nuts now.
Is he? I don't know. Luke Rockhold was back in action on Saturday. Did you catch that one out?
I did.
Karate Combat. If you haven't seen it, go to my YouTube channel. I do a live commentary watch along, and the fight is on there as well. So go check it out. Dubai, Karate Combat, Joe Schilling, Luke Rockhold, because I was like, he's gassed. He is gassed already. Mm-hmm. Turns out he took it on like 3 weeks' notice. So to be fair, three-minute rounds, gets the job done, boom, nice right hook. Drops Joe Schilling after taking him down multiple times. Looks like there's still a bit of fight left in the old dog yet.
Yeah, he's got a little bit left in him still. I found myself in a weird position, Mike.
Go ahead.
Because I like Joe Schilling. I like that guy. I don't know him super well personally. Every interaction I've had with him has been positive. He's never done anything or said anything to me. When I had that break-in in my house, he out of nowhere randomly reached out, like asking, do you need anything?
That's nice.
I feel bad for you and your family. Like, I hope you guys are okay.
Wow.
Like, and we didn't know each other at all. So I've always thought that was really cool of him. And me and Luke have kind of patched our thing up. So I was happy for Luke, but kind of felt bad for Joe Schilling.
Yeah, well, that's fair enough. I mean, it's like anytime people fight, you know, like number one, we have to make predictions. Secondly, mm-hmm. you have personal relationships. You know what I mean? So it's like that every time. But Luke Rockhold, I was doing a live to it and everyone was like, you got to do the trilogy. I'll do Karate Combat against Luke Rockhold. I'll do it. I will have a trilogy with Luke Rockhold in Karate Combat. I would love to.
Why don't we book that? Let's just do that.
This is gathering momentum a little too quickly. Let me just see my hip doctor first and get my fucking neck sorted.
Well, that's not what you said.
Yeah, I'm joking. I'd do it 100%. I would.
Okay, I'll call you after the show.
Let's fucking go.
We'll get this booked.
We're going to Dubai.
The next show will be a fight announcement.
I'm coming back blind. I'm already walking into bloody walls. Yeah, well done to Luke. Well done. Fair play, man. Fair play. So it looks like Armin saw Rookie and he's definitely not coming because he's 12 minutes late. So Armin, I don't know what to tell you. This was your big opportunity. You would have been exposed
right
to all the believers. The international audience, Uganda.
After blowing us off.
Indonesia.
Charles Oliveira would have came on here.
People of the UK, listen, we spoke about Ryan Garcia before. He bet on himself if what Harrington tells me is correct. And Harrington, is this correct? He bet or...
So I saw that he bet 2 million at 6-1 odds. So he collected 12 million from the bookies. But
what was the purse? Do you know what the purse was?
I don't know. I'll look that up now.
So he collected 12 million by betting $2 million on himself.
I was dying to ask you guys, fighters are allowed to bet on themselves? This is the first I'm hearing of this.
Well, you can legally bet on yourself to win.
Yeah, legally you can.
You can bet on yourself to win.
Yeah, to win.
You can't bet on yourself to lose because that's easy. But betting to win, like the odds makers might say, well, we think you're going to lose. So if you want to give us some money for free, go ahead. But to lose, yeah, of course, because you can guarantee you lose a fight.
Yeah, I believe legally you can to win. Obviously, with the UFC's new, in our promotional agreements with the UFC, that's no longer allowed. But yeah, that was something that went on a lot.
Yeah, thanks to James Krause. No more betting at all. Let me ask you this though. That's still brave. I mean, because fighters, we all believe in ourselves and human beings as people. Harrington, can I help you? You're going on and back and forth, and you're making me bloody dizzy. Well, they got one eye. What are you doing?
I got the purse. It wasn't disclosed fully, but Oscar De La Hoya said that he thinks Ryan Garcia is going to make about $30 million from this in an interview before. So it's Oscar De La Hoya, cut that in half, but still probably 15.
Yeah, plus the 12 million. Do you think he's going to pay Devin Haney the 1.5? I don't think so. It's just like, what was it?
He already did.
Tommy
Devin
Fury.
I think so. Yeah, I think he already got paid.
Really?
I think he paid him before they fought.
Yeah.
Wow.
Immediately.
Wow. No way. See, that's amazing. That is called being a man of your goddamn world. Because what was that stupid bet? It was with KSI and John Fury or something like that. And John Fury is still trying to get paid. And you see this all the time where fighters make these silly bets at press conferences. Rarely do they pay up because you got to think about it. There's no contract signed or anything like that. It's just a bit of machoism at the press conference, puffing their chests out. They say things they don't necessarily mean. But for Ryan Garcia, I tell you what, I thought my opinion on him has changed dramatically. It's amazing. But it's not just winning, right? It's the way that he did it. Paying the bet, that is a man of your word because 100%. He didn't have to do that.
Do you remember when Artem Lobov, who did he fight? Michael Johnson on short notice?
He did, I believe.
Michael Johnson missed weight. But Michael Johnson took it on like really short notice, missed weight. And then Artem said, I'm going to give him his money back. I don't want his money. I'm thankful that he just, that he took the fight and he showed up. And then like a week later, Michael Johnson came on and said, yeah, that dude sent me the 20% or whatever, 30% back. I thought that was super cool of Artem.
That's incredible. No, it really is. It really is. But Ryan Garcia, so he bets 2 million on himself, makes 12 million, gives 1.5 away. Okay, fair enough when you put it like that. But I don't care.
Plus a 600.
But still 1.5 million, right? Because that's still a lot of money. And a lot
That's
of
a man that's not married.
Well, it is a man that's not married for sure. He's a good looking kid, though.
My wife would say, I don't give a shit what bet you made. Of course.
If I came home to Rebecca and I said, look, listen, so we made this amount, but I've got to give Devin Haney 1.5 million because we had a stupid bet. Just like you said, she'd be like, I don't care what you said. And I'm like, well, everyone saw it. It was at a press conference. I don't give a shit. You are not giving away $1.5 million so you can get brownie points on fucking social media. Because other than Devin Haney's in a couple of interviews saying, yeah, the prick never paid me, you're not going to hear anything else of it. Mm-mm. Rebecca would say, if you're out of your mind.
Right.
Yeah.
Good for him. That's a big deal.
Good for him indeed. Herringbone.
Well, I was going to say, Ryan Garcia did actually brag about that. After the fight, he's like, I got no girl and no wife to come home to. Like, that's kind of a big thing for him is being young, free, and single.
Well, didn't he just get divorced? I think that's new. Isn't it Harrington? Or no?
I'll look into
that. Maybe that's why he's acting so crazy.
Harrington doesn't know everything about marriages, it turns out. So, speaking about one man, you know, having a blazing performance. I'm trying to find a segue.
Okay.
Did you see the man that went up in flames outside?
Okay.
Where was it? Set himself on fire?
I seen you sent this in the notes, and then I was scrolling on something and got a, and like randomly kind of seen it, but I was like, I don't want to dig too much into it. I'd rather just hear about it in real time.
Harrington, stop feverishly Googling and just set the stage for what went down last week. And I was like, wow, we'll talk about it in a second. But everyone's probably seen it by now.
Yeah, I unfortunately did see it. It came across my timeline. And it's like, I don't know, there was too many good videos of this one. It was a man. He went in the park across the street from the from where the Trump criminal trial is taking place, guaranteeing there'd be like a ton of press and everything there. Doused himself in gasoline after handing out a bunch of flyers that had like conspiracy theories and propaganda on them, and then lit himself on fire. He later succumbed to his injuries, I believe, yesterday and passed away.
Do we have a video, Brian? Not that I want to see somebody die.
I don't
know. But I'm also very intrigued.
But just before.
I don't think we can play that. Can we play that on YouTube?
Well, we're playing
it. No, but I'll play it and I'll cover it up. Just give me one second. I'll find this man's self.
No, you're good. You're good. Listen, I mean, clearly the guy's mentally ill, right?
Well, I would say so.
You know. I mean, that's never the answer to set yourself on fire. Didn't somebody else do that recently as well? There was somebody kind of recently that set themselves on fire.
Yeah, somebody.
Was it protesting Gaza? What's going on there?
They went to the Israeli embassy and did it protesting the war.
Wow.
You got to find a better way.
Because I'm just going to throw it out there. That the moment those flames hit, you're going to be like, I immediately regret this decision. You know what I mean? That is not the way, A, to go, B, to make your point. You know, fuck.
Here's what I always think when I see these things, Mike. I don't know that I care that passionately about anything else enough to light myself on fire.
Well, never mind just that.
And I'm not saying I don't care and I'm not passionate about things. Oh. Like, I mean, listen, if to save my family, if I can light myself on fire, fine, I'll do it.
No,
but like to push some political thing or something that I believe in, or to save the whales, like I'm not lighting myself on fire.
So I found a pretty graphic still and a very edited and like a very blurred out video. So
nice.
Let me know which one you'd
like. Let's just do the still. Just do the still.
God damn. Come on.
Yeah. I mean, that's just an awful way to go. But to your point, what you were just saying there, Anthony, you're absolutely right, because I don't care enough. Like, there's people protesting everywhere, right? Mm-hmm. You're not making any difference. You're not, right? All these Greenpeace and climate change and whale hunting and stop this and stop that and just stop drilling and there's
blocking
a million
traffic
things.
And all sorts of
shit. It's like, fuck that. What, you're not making it? And it's not because I'm not a man of principles. I am a man of principles. Find something better to do with your time. If that's all you've got going on, that you're going to go there somewhere and wave a bloody flag. You know, listen, I know there's a tragic, terrible situation going on in the Middle East, and that's a little bit different. I'm talking about the frivolous things. And you see people,
stupid,
you know, stupid shit. It's like, really? Yeah. You care that much? You're going to go do that? You're not going to make any difference whatsoever.
I always, and this is, I'm going to catch shit for this and I don't care. I always immediately, when I see people protesting dumb shit and things that like, not that, and maybe the idea that they're protesting, maybe I agree with it, But it's like you're not making a difference standing on the corner with three of your friends with a bunch of signs blocking traffic, and you're just in the fucking way. But like, I don't have the time to say, okay, well, on Tuesday from 8 to 4, I'm going to stand up. Like, if you have that kind of time, you need to figure some shit out with your own life, and you need to do more and do better. If you have time to work a full-time job picketing, you need a real goddamn job, or you need to go find something that's putting positivity in the world, because that's not it.
Standing there with Trump flags above freeway bridges. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? It's like, you ain't got kids. You ain't got a wife, a husband.
You don't have shit to do today.
You ain't got shit to do. You're going to stand there with the Biden flag, whatever it is. Really? That's what you're choosing to do with the very limited time that you have on Earth. Number one, neither of them really give a shit about you. You got to focus on you, buddy, because no one else gives a shit. And you going out there and standing there and waving your little flags for whatever it is, I hate to say it, you're not making the change.
It's the same people that stand outside of trials that they're passionate about. Like, you've been standing outside that trial for a month? How do you have the capability to stand outside a courthouse for a month?
Like, it must be nice.
I don't have one free day. Not one day where I could just take off and hold a fucking sign. I don't have one free day.
I wish I had a free day. Right now, you definitely don't. You're training for a fight. You're leaving for Brazil next week. You've got podcasts. You've got ESPN stuff. You've got this, that, and the other. And you got to train. And you got a wife. And you got four kids.
I don't know. I just, like, how do you not have shit to do? Maybe we do too much. Maybe we do too much. We need to get some picketing time scheduled into our lives.
Well, if I did have the spare time, I wouldn't be using it to picket.
No, because when I do, I can't get my ass off the couch because I just want quiet and I want to relax.
When did picketing ever work? When did they ever go, you know what? Those people there, you're right. We're going to change the policy. We're doing it. You fucking hell. There's 17 people with flags. We're changing it. When has that ever worked? When has that ever worked? I don't think it has.
Congressman, why are we voting for this bill? There's 9 people outside with signs that they drew themselves. Why wouldn't we?
I don't listen. Maybe you could say you're bringing awareness to it to other people. Okay. But I really don't see, I can't think of one. Brian, just see if you can look it up. Protesting is one, like, mass riots. How do you feel about this? Stuff.
Like, early 1900s, people picketed a lot because that was the way to get your message out. Now I feel like in the internet
age, well, that was more like unions and like for like the workforce, like the stuff. Workforce.
They all got their shit done.
Yeah, but they just stopped working.
Right,
like they'd shut down whole factories and entire. Yeah,
it's a much different.
It's different.
World
we live in yeah, it's
today.
Different.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's union striking,
right?
For labor reasons, or like which is very suffrage. Very different because once production of a certain good or product stops, then yeah, of course. But that's that's a strike. That's not people standing out there and waving their little flags and going, hey.
Protesting. You know, I guess protesting and striking are different.
Yeah, very completely different. Yeah. I'm trying to think what there is to talk about here. I'm looking at the notes. There's two things here I don't really want to talk about. One of them's Armin Sarukian, the prick. I'm joking, Armin. I'm joking. He's not. He's a very nice guy. No, Aljamain Sterling. But I guess it's a conversation point. Or this is why I didn't want to bring it up, because it sounds like we're inviting a discussion to just take a dump on him, which is what the internet seems to be doing. Aljamain Sterling says that his fight at UFC 300 wasn't the most entertaining, but it was the most dominant. Our fight on that particular night was not the most entertaining, but it was the most dominant fight I think you could have possibly had when you looked at the entire card. Harrington, you put this in the notes. You're forcing me to read your words. Come on. So read the rest of it out, what you wrote there for me.
Okay. You got a guy who, on average, lands about 4 to 5 strikes per minute, who is reduced to about 0.5.
Yeah. Tried to get me to read that out.
That's an Aljamain quote. He said it.
Oh, did he really?
Yeah.
It's Aljo saying that he reduced Calvin Kattar to almost 0 strikes a minute. Yeah. I mean, I can't disagree with Aljo. But also, yeah. I think we need to do a better job of managing our expectations. Like, is Aljamain dominant most of the time? Yeah. Is Aljamain the best bantamweight in UFC history? Like it or not?
Yeah.
Yeah, he is. But also, we know how he fights. We know what he is willing to do, and we know what he's not willing to do. He's not going to get into firefights. Where he's not Justin Gaethje and Max Holloway, where he's going to point at the ground and start throwing bombs. He's just not going to do that. So at some point, it's our fault that we expect him to be in these barn-burning shootouts, because he's not.
No. I don't think we do. I don't think anybody expects that, because we've never seen that from Aljamain Sterling.
Well, I think a lot of people do. They're like, he's fucking boring, blah, 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 blah. All he wants to do is wrestle. Yeah, we know. So expect that, and then you won't be so disappointed when it happens.
We all know, as fighters and people with half an ounce of intelligence that follow the fight game and the UFC in particular, we know he's coming off the back of the loss out to Sean O'Malley. So that's going to make you not be the most reckless. So he went out there and he got a dominant victory, and it was dominant. He shut down Kelvin Kattar, and he made it not look easy. Kelvin gave him some moments, but it was a dominant victory, right? Yeah. I think Aljamain would help himself. I think it was impressive, not taking anything away from him. He needs to stop talking about it being the most dominant victory. I think there it will throw back to everybody booing at UFC New Jersey when he won and defended the belt against Cejudo, right? Mm-hmm. Because listen, you can't force people to change their opinion. You can't give them one thing and say that it's another. You can't say this fight was boring and safe and cautious, which it kind of was, right? Mm-hmm. But for these reasons. But then at the same time go, well, hold on a minute. No, what the fuck are you talking about? This was the most dominant fight at UFC 300. Never mind Max Holloway face-planting Justin Gaethje. Never mind Alex Pereira knocking out Jamal Hill in the first round, so on and so forth. What I did was the most dominant, because people aren't going to drink that, you know?
As and if analysts, the milk
turns out to be sour, if the milk turns out to be sour, I ain't the kind of pussy to drink it. What's the movie?
I don't know, but it's a funny quote.
Long stock of two smoking barrels. And if the milk turns out to be sour, I ain't kind of pussy to drink it. Anyway, yeah, but you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, 100%. And I think that in the way that he's performing it, if we're just looking at it as analysts, he might be right. He fights one of the hardest styles there is to fight, and he went in and fairly dominated. He was never in any trouble, and you know, whatever. But I don't know. It's hard to say. Jamal Hill, Alex Pereira. Pereira didn't really take any shots at all. Lands one big clean one and puts him out. Like, that's about as dominant as you can ask for.
It doesn't get more dominant.
Yeah, but if on the flip side, when we're breaking down fights, being completely controlling someone at the highest level of the game for 15 minutes is very hard to do. So, yeah, it's a conversation. It would be an easier conversation to have coming off like a finish.
No, it is. And again, like Aljamain Sterling.
Yeah, me too.
A lot of respect, a tremendous amount of respect for him. So, you know, but as I say, you can't present one thing and then tell them it's another. You know, right. it was a dominant fight, but it was one of the most lackluster of the night. It kind of sucked the energy out of the room, and you can't deny that. And we're not being haters or being pricks to Aljamain Sterling for acknowledging that. I think that's a well-known fact. I think everybody that was there, I think that everybody that watched it knows that. Mm-hmm. What he should have said was, look, guys, you got to remember, I just got knocked out over Sugar Sean O'Malley. Do you know how hard it is to come back from that situation? You know, I got flatlined. I got dropped hard. It's like I've got all these demons inside my mind. So, yeah, I played it a little bit safe. It's my first time at 145 against a guy with a similar style. So, yeah, the most important thing was getting the victory. You know, if you would have said that, people would say, you know what? And that's fine. Because guess what? You still won. You still got the job done. Speaking of Sean O'Malley and speaking of Ryan Garcia, Brian, I sent you a little video earlier to the email. So, Sean O'Malley wants to box Ryan Garcia, even more so now after the victory over Devin Haney at the weekend. He says that he wants to beat Merab, obviously. That will make his star even bigger. And then down the line, he wants to box Garcia. Apparently, he said the UFC are fine with him doing that as long as there'd be enough money involved. Can you play the tape, please, Brian?
Yeah. I mean, but two fights down the road. Okay, say it happens. You fucking turn Rab's nose sideways, TKO him. Boom. Right. Peace up, Ilya. Five rounder.
Boom.
Then what?
Nah.
Is it possible? Is it possible for Ryan Garcia?
A boxing fight's possible, for sure.
MMA, no way in hell. I mean, no commission would even let that go.
The Sugar Show, why don't we do something a little special? Why can't we get him into the UFC with some kind of new rule, like a different rule or something, to where you guys
I'm not there yet. I still got to become bigger. I got to be two more though. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Two more fucking sick performances, and then we're talking about being able to do whatever the fuck.
But maybe want. Yeah, two more. I think that'd be perfect because your pay per view was top five all time in UFC
gate.
Sales. Gate, right? Gate. Like that's fucking insane.
Yeah, that's good. But I also think it was partly because of me, but also because UFC is just that fucking big now. They grew 40% over COVID. So from 2020 to 2024, they've grown however much more. UFC is just fucking on a rocket ship, whether I'm fucking in it or not. I mean, but I feel like I could pull some numbs.
The relationship's so good with those higher ups. They fucking love you. You're not it's not like.
They told me, you can do a boxing fight 100% if it makes us enough money. Like, so the option's there. Just has to be able to make enough money. But Ryan being a fucking freak like that, you need two A-sides to make a fucking Floyd Connor fight. Like you know what I mean?
Yeah. That'll do. excuse me. Number one, first thing, it's really nice to see Sean being as level-headed because he's right. It would have been easy for him to go, yeah, you're right, UFC 299 was a ridiculous gate because of me, and I am a star. Mm-hmm. But he was quick to add, well, hold on a minute. That was a star-studded card. The UFC is a juggernaut. You know, top to bottom, that was hyped as the greatest fight card before UFC 300 was. So it was really nice to see him. What do you think about him going and fighting Ryan Garcia, though? I think he's right in what he says. Two more fights, for sure, it would need to be for him to really elevate his status. I also think what he's talking about there with the UFC is because, listen, they're his promoters. He's under contract, so they would all be partners in the promotion of it. They're not going to do that, and they're not going to risk their bantamweight champion potentially losing, more than likely, according to the odds makers, losing. They're not going to risk the damage to the marketability unless there's enough money involved, which makes sense.
I thought everything he said was right on point. He sounded very, very well thought out. Like he's being very smart. Like he's not speaking crazy shit. Like, yeah, I can go do that. They don't care. Like I thought it was good insight. I think that's really good insight. I think he's being really self-reflective of exactly where he is and where he needs to be to make a fight like that happen. Technically, I think that's a rough one for Sean O'Malley.
Especially if Ryan Garcia comes in heavy.
Yeah, no shit.
Yeah. Connection. 1.5 million, though.
I don't know where I seen this clip, but it was another boxer, I don't remember who it was saying a couple days before the Devin Haney-Ryan Garcia fight, he said that, what do you think is going to happen in the Garcia-Haney fight? And he said, I think Ryan Garcia just goes in there and walks him down and drops him in the first round. He was like, he probably hits harder than Tank. And I was like, that is absolutely crazy. And then the fight happens. Like, holy shit, that guy was totally like Ryan. I mean, it's just different. It's different. Sean O'Malley's a fantastic striker, but it's a lot of his game is predicated on the kicks. Like it's kind of built and worked around that.
All right, this episode is sponsored by 8 Sleep, and they've been supporting the show for a while. And I'm telling you right now, if you struggle sleeping at night because the bed is too hot or whatever, if you're tossing and turning and you just can't sleep well, then 8 Sleep's mattress cover, the pod, is the answer that you have been looking for. And not only will it improve your quality of sleep, it'll improve your quality of life, your mental health, your business, even your relationship, because often men and women want the room at a different temperature. Well, now you can set one side of the bed as low as 55 degrees and the other side as high as 110 degrees. So you can find the perfect blend. And by the way, it is also then programmed to cool down in the middle of the night and then to gently warm in the morning, because apparently, according to all the research, that's what needs to happen for you to get the perfect sleep. Then if you are obsessed like Rebecca is, you can look at the app and you can see all of your sleep data. It will tell you how much deep sleep, when you were actually asleep, when you woke up, how much REM you had, your overall sleep performance. There's so much data on there. It's very, very easy to use. And if you're into that kind of stuff, then you're going to have a field day. And if you just want to sleep better, and feel great, then this thing is a game changer. I can't recommend it highly enough. So, 8 Sleeps Pod 3. That's the official title of it, the 8 Sleep Pod 3, okay? You are going to love this thing, as I say. Just slips on the mattress, then you plug it in, and you're off to the races. Sleeping well, you get in bed at night. I love it. It's like, oh, that's cool. You know, like, we all love the cool side of the pillow. Well, that's what it's like. Even when the air conditioning isn't on, even when it's bloody 90 degrees here in California, the bed is always nice and cool and you sleep like a baby. Or you can make it hot and toasty, whatever you want. So right now we have a tremendous offer. 8sleep.com/Bisping is the website. You're going to get $200 off and free shipping. 8sleep.com/Bisping to get $200 off and free shipping. So there's a story here that you put in your notes. Mm-hmm. It's the last one in, so I'm assuming you were clutching at straws. Number 14. You put Conor McGregor gave Bisping a shout out when he reported a picture of himself and P. Diddy and Big Mike, and I think Lucas was in his arms. You're right, he did. However, and there is Lucas. It shows you, because Lucas now is, if not, is the same size, if not a smidge taller than me now. He tweeted that in 2013. Just put the picture up again, Brian. So it's a little bit old news, but P. Diddy is in the news. So I was going to repost that on Twitter with the caption, I told you I used to hang around with dickheads. But then I thought McGregor might think I was aiming it at him. It wasn't aimed at him. It was aimed at the other person in the shot, the one and only Puff Daddy. That was at a UCLA game. We went to a football game with Audie, our manager, and a little picture with Puff Daddy. What is going on with Puff Daddy right now? Is he actually on the run? I feel like Brian knows the ins and outs to this.
Yeah, but I think sure. Brian probably knows.
What is going on? I know his kids were arrested. I know his house was arrested. Because my wife asked me in bed the other night, she said, what's going on with him? Is he on the run?
I haven't been paying the most attention to all this. I know I've seen pictures of him like out doing shit. Like he was out in like the boardwalk the other day. Like, so I'm not really sure what's going on, but I do know that the FBI took a bunch of his shit.
Yeah, the
evidence.
The only reason I know about Puff Daddy is not because I was there at these illicit parties. No, it's because 50 Cent Instagram just shits on him. And anybody he feels like shitting on anytime he wants. And I must admit, they are pretty funny.
Yeah, 50 Cent is pretty funny when he's trashing people. I watched this this show on, there's this YouTube channel that I follow called Swamp Stories. And it just tells like the history of old gangsters and crazy stories of celebrities and rappers. And anyways, there's an episode called Surviving P. Diddy.
Oh, no.
That guy is a monster. An absolute monster. If you get a second, you get 45 minutes, or you're just sitting around, you want something to listen to. Like it goes like through, like from P. Diddy in the, like the 90s till today, he has absolutely trashed a lot of people. There's some weird shit in there too.
So what did they have to do to survive though? Like what are the allegations? Is it just,
well, one of them bad is the
business
the
practice
reason that,
because obviously that Biggie.
Yeah, there's the Biggie thing. Like there was some stuff that happened in the Biggie story that I didn't know. Like Biggie didn't even want to come to the party that they were at before he got shot. And P. Diddy's the one who convinced him and canceled all of his plans. He was supposed to be in Europe doing like a signing or like an appearance in Europe. So he was getting ready to go do that instead. And P. Diddy like essentially forced him to come to that party where he ended up getting shot afterwards. Like there's a whole bunch more to it, but
there's a lot of sketchy tinfoily hat shit around P. Diddy.
There's some weird Usher stuff. Let's just be honest. The Usher thing is weird, where he had like Usher and parties with naked people and drugs when he was like 12 years old. Like that's
Justin Bieber.
Yeah.
His adopted 12-year-old daughter.
Yeah, not for nothing. And there's a lot of weird stuff. I don't know what it all leads to, but it's all weird.
And he's an expert at mind fucking. Did you know that? I'm mind fucking you right now, Anthony.
Are you?
Yeah.
Why?
I'm supposed to say, I hope you're wearing a condom because I got a dirty fucking mind. What movie is that? I watched it Saturday night. Puff Daddy was in it.
I don't know.
Get Into the Greek. Have you seen that?
No, I've never even heard
it's
of that.
It's a funny movie. It's got, what's it called? Russell Brand in it. Saturday night, we're just going through. Like, what did we watch? We watched a film, Nil by Mouth, an independent British film. My God, it is heavy. But if you want to know how grim it is growing up in working class London in the 90s, my God, Nil by Mouth. We watched that, but it's so heavy. I said, we need something a little bit more
something light.
Upbeat. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's
so
a heavy.
So you chose a P. Good, Diddy movie?
We're just going, yeah. Yeah, exactly. No, we chose. And we're just going through Netflix. I'm like, oh, there we go. Get Into the Greek. We've seen it one time years ago. I said, let's watch that. I said, that's funny if I remember. And it is funny. It's hilarious. But yeah, we chose a P. Diddy movie.
Oh, to God. Keep it you light. Know,
it's a slow day in the world of mixed martial arts. Anthony, I'm going to ask you about your mind coming into this fight. Obviously, mm-hmm. you know, we're talking about MMA and all the rest of it. You're flying down to Brazil next week. I don't need to say this. You know this. The results haven't been what you were looking for recently. Mm-hmm. Going up against Vitor Petrino, undefeated, powerful dude. How's this treating you? And I'm pointing at my head for the audio-only listeners.
I'm in a really good place. I really leaned into my therapy and figured out like what the hell's going on in my head. Cause here's the problem. I'm the most inconsistent guy the last 5 years. Like sometimes I show up and I beat anybody in the world. And sometimes I show up and I shit the bed and it's all mental. It's all where I'm focused, where my head is, where my personal life is. And I don't mean that like my family or anything like that, just where I feel in my personal life. And I really wanted the Vitor Petrino fight after he called me out, partially because it looked hard. It looked like it was going to be hard, like that would be a hard fight. And so I told Mick Maynard right away, if that guy's ranked on Tuesday, I'll take it. And they got lucky and he was ranked. And so that worked. But I like the matchup, like stylistically, I do well versus guys like him, who, not that he's not good, he's predictable. Like he's kind of set in his ways. Like I can, I don't have to say this without like just giving my whole game plan, but I can predict or I can create his reaction and kind of know where he's going to go. So like I can outthink him for sure. And he's going to be a motherfucker for a little bit. Like he's big and strong and powerful, but I have answers for all of that. Like I know what to do with big, powerful, strong guys. Everybody's big. Everyone's strong at this weight class, but he really leans into that. And so I know how to deal with that. So we'll just go deal with it. And then once he doesn't have that, now he has to lean on his technique and his skill set. I think that is fairly limited. Not bad. I'm not saying it's bad. Mm. It's limited and it's predictable. He doesn't have he's not a some crazy black belt world champion that I got to worry about him taking me down and passing my guard and slicing and dicing me on the ground. He's not like crazy, crazy explosive. Like, does he hit hard? For sure. But he's not Khalil Roundtree fast. He's not crazy dynamic and unpredictable like Johnny Walker. Like, I like the matchup. I think he's really good. I actually really impressed with what he's been able to do with, you know, in his kind of short career, at least versus credible opponents. Like the ones before, it's kind of Brazil and they just beat up random people and that is what it is. But he's done very well versus really tough guys.
Yeah, I don't disagree with anything what you said there, but I was meaning more not with the X's and O's and the technical mm-hmm. stuff and all the rest of it, more in like, you know, what's the mindset coming into this one? Because anytime I had a loss, it was always like, right, okay, the hunger was stronger than ever. Mm-hmm. And it was like, it just fueled me and angered me and made me mad and drove me and motivated me, whichever adjective you want to use. And it always put me back to this feeling of fuck. I'm at the bottom again. I've lost. I want to be the champion. And mm-hmm. that kind of mindset never left me ever.
That's exactly where I am. That's exactly where I am. And I accidentally, you know, Neil Magny caught a shot accidentally the last time I kind of talked about this, but I have become at least in the eyes of some of the people in the division, I'm the wounded lion that they think is at the end. I got the big name. The name that people recognize, and my face is the one that's on TV. So they want to come and like, I don't know. I feel like I'm being viewed as being done. Like I'm on my last leg. Like I'm about, like I'm just on the edge of retirement, and I'm fucking not. And it pisses me off. Like maybe I'm a bit inconsistent at times, but if I fucking show up, I'll beat everybody in the division. And I don't give a fuck who gets mad about that. And they all know it, or else they wouldn't get so mad about it when I said it. You know what I mean? Like if someone that I know that I would smoke says, oh, I'll beat that guy, I just laugh because I know that's stupid. And that's why they get so angry about it. If I show up and I'm on point and I'm mentally where I need to be, I'll beat them all. So that's where I'm at mentally. Like it's not even about proving anything to anybody else or chasing the title or trying to even get back on the right track. I'm just trying to prove something to myself. Mm. You know, like I got to slow down a little bit. I think just in life, I think I got to slow down a little bit and just focus on one singular thing. And that's what I've been doing. And I'm a terrible training partner right now. If I'm being honest, I'm sure my training partners are fucking happy to see me leave. Cause I'm just,
well,
it's not about anybody else. I'm fucking raging in the gym. And I'm,
you like, gotta be.
When we get matched up and I can see it in their face, they're like, fuck, like, here we go. Like, cause I'm fucking going, I'm going. There's no rounds off. There's no taking it easy. There's like at a point, like I'm not even your friend. When we're out after training, I'll lay around and we'll chit chat and I'll ask about your family and how's life. But like when we're in there between the hours of 10 and 12:30, like I'm fucking, and cause I don't got that long left. I don't got that long left feeling how I feel now. I feel great physically, but that's not always going to be the case. So I need to stop fucking around and just make the most of it.
Well, that's good to hear, Anthony. It's great to hear. I would say we do a live watch along on the channel, but I'll be in England. The downside to that is also that the fight's going to be on at like 5 o'clock in the goddamn morning, and I fly back on the Sunday.
Well, so just drink through the night.
Well, I'm in two minds. It's going to be me and Rebecca. I'm in and out for a few days. I've got a little business trip. I'm like, do I just stay up all night? I'm considering it.
And just sleep on the plane.
I know, exactly. And that's what I said to Rebecca. I'm like, then we just sleep on the plane the entire way home, stay up all night, you know? And she's like, yeah, but they do a good breakfast at that hotel. I want us to go down and have the nice breakfast. I'm like, fuck the breakfast. Anthony's fighting. This is a big one.
We're celebrating a win here.
Oh, God, we will be celebrating a win. Number 13 in the notes, or no, should I say number 12, and we all wish you the best of luck, Anthony. We're all going to be nervous for you, but we'll all be wishing you the well. And, of course, you can get the job done. Believe in yourself. Train hard. You know, you've got two more weeks. Two more weeks. A lot can change in 2 weeks. You've got to be ultra-disciplined. You can't cut any fucking corners. That's why I said, are you going to be here next Monday? Don't worry about it if you can't be, because you've got to put this fight first. This fight comes above everything else now. No fucking volleyball tournaments with your daughters. No podcasts. No fucking going here. No fucking going there. It's got to be 100% focused. These last 2 weeks now, dial in. Feel good. Put this first. Everything else afterwards is still going to be there, and you can pick it up and continue it after the job's done. But right now, it's going to be single-minded.
And it's scheduled to the day. Like, it's
laser focus.
I'm four days left here. Vitor Petrino. I'm scheduled 4 days. I got 4 days left here. I drive home. It's insane cardio and weight cut, you know, just managing my weight for the 4 days. 3 days I'm home. And then fly to Brazil and we do this damn thing.
Just get out there and start blasting fucking hill sprints every other day. I'm telling you. I'm serious, man. Go do some fucking
conditioning.
People don't do hill sprints because they don't want to do it.
Oh, we do hill sprints.
Suck balls. Yeah. You're going to do them at least once a week, but fuck it. Just, I want you out there every 2 days, Anthony, at the end of your street, on the end of Anthony Smith Drive. Sprint up the fucker, walk back down. Sprint up the fucker, walk back down. What is it? They call it something in glizzies? What is it? You call it yard pimps and glizzies?
Yeah, I forgot.
Like, Anthony's been on the yard pimps and glizzies again. He's sprinting up the hill and walking back down over and over.
Glizzy gladiators.
That's what we want to see, Anthony. We need yard pimps and glizzies sprinting up and down those fucking hills.
Fuck yeah.
Lincoln, Nebraska. Let's go. Harrington, what do you want?
So you had asked for number 12 in the notes. That was Robert Whittaker. Had some thoughts on Bo Nickel, right? Obviously, Robert Whittaker has been a stalwart in the middleweight division for the last 6-7 years now. He says he saw some holes in Bo Nickel's game at UFC 300. He said, I think I saw some potential hole. We saw some potential holes in Bo Nickel's game. Bo finally got a guy that he couldn't just do what he wanted to with. Cody Brundage isn't the best fighter in the world. I think Bo Nickel did fine versus a dude who can kind of wrestle, kind of strike, and he didn't look as good as he has previously because he's been running through shoe-ins for him. It is what it is. I think he's got some work to do before he's ready to fight top 10 dudes.
I think that's a fair statement from Robert Whittaker. I don't think he's being a hater there or anything like that, saying, no, this guy's getting hype. He's getting a push and I had to earn this the hard way. No, I think that's a fair statement. He didn't just run through Cody Brundage. Yeah, he got the job done. He got the win. He got the victory. But it wasn't like fight, he was insane. Right? Yeah, he does. I think Jacob Malkoon, is it?
No, so his management said that's not true. Malkoon put that out, apparently hoping for it. Bo Nickel's management says that's not happening, and Bo is only focused on a ranked fight for his next opponent.
Okay. Here's where I was going to go with this, Anthony, because the wrestling that Bo has, and we know if anyone's heard me speak about Bo Nickel, I've been very complimentary. Mm-hmm. I do agree with what Robert Whittaker said. And it leads me to think of this. Yeah, he's the all-star wrestler, but whose wrestling game has been more dominant and more impressive and more effective? Hamzat Chimaev?
Hamzat. I don't even care who else you're going to say. Whoever's after that, it's Hamzat.
yeah, I know. Look at the way Hamzat takes people down. Look at the way he just fucking picked up and slammed and dominated Kamaru Usman in that first round. Look at the ability that he has. And as good as Bo Nickel is, and he's calling out Hamzat Chimaev, I'm telling you right now, if it comes down to a straight wrestling match, in that first 5 minutes at the very least, Hamzat's probably got the edge.
That's the only chink that I have up to this point with Hamzat, is he is so dominant in the first round when he's fresh. I think he gets a little bit nervous about his conditioning as the fights wear on, because he never really wrestles a whole lot later on in the fight, the couple times that it's happened. So to be fair, he's only gone deep into fights with really high level guys.
Kamaru, so that's Gilbert. And
Gilbert. That's a little bit of an unfair assessment, because the times he has gone into deeper fights to a decision, it's been versus the best guys in the world. But I think there's a conditioning issue there.
Because
he doesn't wrestle like that deep into a fight. But like you said, first round, I just don't see a fight is different. Fighting and wrestling is different than just wrestling.
I was talking about this recently. I'm not sure if it was on here or somewhere else. So I apologize if it was on here. The thing is, so you could say, so Hamzat needs to pace himself. He's going to do 5 rounds against Whittaker. So he's got to pace himself. Well, if he paces himself, he's taken away from what makes him so great and what makes him effective. Do you know what I mean? There's no point being mediocre for 5 rounds.
You just need
to be really good for 5. Yeah. Not immense for 1, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But the thing is, he's so confident in his ability of wiping them out in round 1 that he just goes for it. Well, if you take a little bit of that away and he doesn't go for the finish, then what is he going to do? You know, it's a real tricky one for Hamzat Chimaev.
It's a real mess. It's a real mess. Because then he's not as dangerous if he backs off the gas a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's not as hard to deal with if he backs off the gas a little bit.
If he backs off, that's what makes him so successful, because he's just a force of nature running through people. It's
a real problem.
It's a real problem. Him and Robert Whittaker, how do you feel about that one?
I think it's a great fight. I think it's a great fight. Robert looks so good. And it was his last fight?
Costa.
Last fight was Costa? Yeah. I don't know. It really depends. It comes down to the wrestling. Robert Whittaker's fought a lot of really good wrestlers, though.
Robert Whittaker beat Yoel Romero twice.
Twice. Yeah, twice. I mean, they don't get any more bigger, stronger, and athletic than that.
Explosive.
And with a high-level explosive wrestling
ability. Yeah, I tell you what, fair play to Whittaker for taking that fight.
because he loses to Dricus du Plessis, right? Mm-hmm. Comes back, beats Costa, back in the mix.
Yeah.
No one's putting their hand up to fire Hamzat Chimaev, but Whittaker does it. Fair play. Yeah.
Talk about strength of schedule, too. We always talk about RDA strength of schedule. You kind of go back and look at Whittaker's record. God damn, that guy's got some monsters on there. I mean, he's fought best of the best his entire career.
All right, this episode is sponsored by Mando. That is going to change the way you smell for the better. Okay, listen, Mando is a deodorant that will stop your body creating the odors for up to 72 hours. Clinically proven. It's safe to use anywhere all over your body, pits, packages, and down below if you want to do that, in your stinky crevices, the stomach folds, your feet, wherever you want to put it. As I said, it's clinically proven to control odor for better than just shower and soap alone. And Mando Starter Pack is perfect for new customers because it comes with the solid deodorant stick. You get the cream tube deodorant, you get two free products of your choice, like the mini body wash and deodorant wipes, and you also get free shipping. So if you are one of those guys, and listen, there's nothing to be ashamed of. Some people smell. Some people struggle with body odor. Some people sweat a little more than the next guy. Just washing alone, this is better. Spraying deodorant, a lot of the time, you're not stopping what's actually causing the smell. That is where Mando comes in, because it stops the root cause. It stops the body from actually creating those odors in the first place, and it will leave you smelling very nice as well. So right now, as a special offer for the Believe You Me listeners, you can get $5 off a Mando starter pack with the code Bisping when you go to shopmando.com. That equates to over 40% off your starter pack when you visit shopmando.com and use the code Bisping. Shopmando.com, $5 off the starter pack when you use the code Bisping. And another middleweight booking we just had as well. We saw a little fun video. Maybe we'll play it. In fact, Brian, play the video. It's Sean Strickland versus Paulo Costa.
Costa, he's a funny guy. He makes me laugh. He's pro-free speech. I like that guy. But I'm going to make that dirty Brazilian bleed. And, you know, I'm going to do it for Brazil, because Brazil doesn't even like Costa. So, hey, Brazil, this one's for you guys. Let's get it done.
Go about. Hijo de puta.
Mia, hijo de puta. Yo soy mexicano.
I'm half a Mexican. What are you talking about? Shut up, motherfucker. Don't speak English. Speak the fuck Spanish to my povo. Yo soy Mexican. You will never touch the secret juice. You hear me? Shut the fuck up.
Boludo. I'm not sure what you actually want us to comment on there, Harrington, but yeah, I did see that video and I was like,
that is funny.
You know, given the Ricky Martin shit. I tell you what, that's a tough fight for both men, that one there.
Yeah, so I trained with Strickland the week of 300.
Yeah.
Really impressed with that guy. Really impressed. Like, whatever skill set he shows when we watch him fight on TV, he's got a whole lot more that he's holding on to. And I don't know why he's holding on to it, but that guy's good. He's real.
No, I've trained with him extensively, but that's always the way though, isn't it? That's often the way. Like, I never showed any jujitsu for the most part in my fights other than defensively.
Motherfucker held me down for several rounds.
Oh yeah. Like, no, he's got, I've always
the
said
whole point of, the whole point of the round was to get to your feet. That motherfucker held me down several times.
And
I was so angry.
I'm trying to think. Who was it? Was it Strickland? No, it wasn't Strickland. Who was it? It was somebody that we know. We were doing the same drill. Who was it? Oh, my God. Who the fuck was it? I don't think it was Strickland. It might have been Strickland, though. No, it wasn't. But you know, you do the thing, you hold them down and you ground and pound, mm-hmm. and you're allowed to ground and pound them. They can hit you from the back, but it's pointless. And they've just got to get to the feet. So I did it and I held them down, whoever it was. I can't remember who it was. It might have been Sean. I'm not sure. I think the full round and give him a good bit of a scene too or whatever. And then when it was the flip side and I went on my back, I was getting up a few times. And then I got to my feet and it was the end of the round. And then as I was getting to my feet, they went,
bow, 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 like four times and cracked me in the face with the little gloves on about four times.
No.
What the hell? It wasn't Strickland. Who was it? It's on the tip of my tongue. It's on the tip of my... I'm like, you're a... Uriah Hall. That's who it was. It was Uriah Hall. Man. It was Uriah Hall. And I was getting back
and
to
he just
feet.
Gave you a four piece.
And the round ended, right? So I stopped and then boom, boom, boom. But hard with the little glove. I'm like, the fuck are you doing? And he's like, well, that's the drill. I'm like, that's the drill. When the round's going, you can clearly see it just ended. Anyway, I just said, you're not a bad training partner, bro. You're having a little sulk, aren't you? Because you couldn't get up.
You're angry.
You're having a little bit of a sulk. Anyway, Anthony, if you are here Monday, great. If you're not, we will all understand. Let me know when you can, though, so we can get someone to step in for you and fill in for you. But if you have a question for myself, or for Anthony, send it in.
Well, I'm going to have to. I'm going to have to skip. Oh.
Oh, you got
to
go?
I have to skip out on the questions, Mike. Yeah, that's I got to get my blood work done.
Well, okay. Well, you
tell them.
Your Wi-Fi is losing.
It's losing speed.
Megabytes. Okay. Gigawatts. 1.27 gigawatts. Out of it. Fuck off.
All right.
Monday. Let me know. Shoot me a text. Take it easy.
Yes, sir. Goodbye.
Goodbye, goodbye, goodbye. And Harrington, that is your cue. And if you do have a question for either myself or Anthony or whoever I have filling in on a Thursday or even in maybe on a Monday, you never know, you know, send it into bympod@gmail.com. I say this all the time. Questions about life, you know, yeah, okay, if there's something you really want to know about MMA, do it. But if you're just sending it in to kind of get on the show and it's a bland MMA question, it doesn't excite us or excite you guys, the listeners, the believers that support this show. And we support and appreciate every single one of you guys for making this little show what it is. So thank you all from the bottom of my heart.
If you're listening on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you find podcasts, make sure to subscribe, leave us a 5-star rating, positive review. It really helps out on those platforms. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure you subscribe to the channel and you hit that notification bell to find out whenever a new video drops. And if you want to catch over 500 episodes you can't find anywhere else, completely ad-free, totally uncensored, head to gasdigital.com, use the promo code BYM14, get a 2-week free trial, check out over 20 great shows on the network.
All right, first question we have here today is Abby from Fight Space featuring Michael Bisping.
Abby.
This feels a little weird, doesn't it?
Have you not got a question for me?
No, not this time. You're
not
right
today.
Here. I don't
want
to ask
come
a question.
Come on, come on. Always a pleasure.
Thank you.
Boom.
Your girl made it. I just want to know from you boys, what was the weirdest thing that's ever happened to you trying to check into a hotel? Literally, as I'm checking in, I had paid for my cab with my debit card, walked into the casino, and my card disappeared, Shanghai, and unpacked my whole bag. Like, it's gone. So what's the craziest thing that's ever happened to you just trying to get into your freaking hotel at one of these events? See you. It's
going to
be an awesome weekend.
Yeah, by the way, that annoyed me because for the TNT Sports, and thank you, Abby. Hope you're well. Thanks for the question. Well, I had to go sit with the press and I felt like so self-conscious. Like, we're going to do for TNT Sports, used to be BT Sports, we're going to do a thing covering the press conference. I was like, right, we're just going to stand there and like do our little bits with the microphones. We'd sit there with that in the press section. I'm like, not being a diva, it just feels weird for me. I'm like, I don't want to be sitting in the press section, okay? Do you know what I mean? Weirdest thing, checking into a hotel. It is something I do far too frequently, sadly. Trying to think, there's so many. I can't remember yesterday. I do remember I checked in for a room once and I walked in the room. I threw my bags down and I could hear the shower going. And that's there was a weird dude in the shower naked. I was like, what the? And he's like, whoa, what are you doing? And somehow the rooms had got mixed up. So that was pretty weird.
They gave you keys to that guy's room that he was already staying in?
I walked in on a naked guy in the room.
And you look like you could possibly be a hooligan coming to rob him. You know what I mean?
Well, thank you very much. I'll take that as a compliment. But yeah, no, I do.
You're like a giant brick of a man. Like you. I'd be fucking shook if you just walked into my hotel room and I was naked.
Especially like in like some weird like American town and I've got the skinhead. And like, hello, mate, what the fuck's going on? And he's like, what is... I'm like, bro, relax, calm down. I've got my bags. They gave me this room. And he was like, oh, okay. So I went downstairs and they were like, oh, we're so sorry. But yeah, but that's about it, Abby. Ooh. From the Fight Space. Hamilton, anything?
Yeah, so I had a weird one. It wasn't it was kind of similar to that. I wasn't checking into the hotel room. I'd already been in, and for some reason I woke up in such a like daze. I went to the bathroom and then I walked into the hallway, like instead of going back into bed, and I didn't have my keys on me. I'm in my underwear. I'm so in a daze, I don't even remember which hotel room is mine. They ended up having to bring me, like security came and got me, brought me down to the front desk and made me a new key for my room. It was insane.
Yeah. Yeah, I did that, something very similar. I walked out of my room looking for the bathroom. I just checked into a hotel. It was in Prague, and there was two doors. One was the bathroom. One was the hallway.
You just went to the hallway?
I might have been naked. I got locked out of my room. Do you know what I mean? Sleepwalking. I was like, oh, shit. And then the door shuts and I couldn't, because I was like half asleep in the middle of the night. Anyway, moving on. Brian.
All right. Next question we have here is from Kyle Kostencha.
Ooh, what's up, Kyle?
I mispronounced that name.
Biz Bing, thanks so much for listening to my question here. So first off, I should say, fuck you, Harrington. Really excited to talk to you, Bisping. But one of the big things I really want to ask you is I am taking my wife to London for the first time. And I want to know exactly from your perspective, what are the things I should see? Obviously, the Tower of London is what your wife loves. I've already checked that box. But I'm looking for the places I need to eat, the things I need to see from a true native British man. I want to know what's going to be cool so I can impress her, because we all know what happens when you impress the ladies. As well, just keep being awesome. Love you guys. And just bring back more of Daddy Fury, because that is the best impression and best thing that you do. Love you. Keep being awesome. And can't wait for some great advice.
Well, no man alive should request the impression that I haven't done for quite some time. I haven't been doing it because people said you've done too much, but it's back. We're fucking back, baby. Well, thank you very much. Oh God, I'm not no London tour guide. I mean, obviously, Tower of London's a big one. Just go for a walk around Soho. That's a really cool area. Shoreditch is a cool spot. There's, you know, it's a little newer. It used to be kind of a shitty area, but now it's been gentrified. Stuff like that. You can do like the Jack the Ripper tours and Jack the Ripper Museum and stuff like that. I mean, you've got all your historic sites. We're going to Windsor Castle, which is it's a little train ride about half an hour outside. Windsor Castle's phenomenal. We've been there before a long time ago. But what were you going to say, Harrington?
I was going to ask about the Eye of London. Like, is that akin to our Empire State Building? It's whack and nobody actually
don't
likes it.
Do it. I was talking to someone recently from ESPN and I said, oh, yeah, it's awful. And they were, oh, no, we really loved it. Well, we went, it was summer. It was boiling hot. We got on it and it was packed. It was jammed, right? And there was so many people in the car itself. You couldn't move, right? As Strickland would say, it was dick to dick, nipple to nipple. Do you know what I mean? And the thing was so slow because we walked on. I thought, oh, it's dead. We're going to be the only ones on. Great. All of a sudden, they just kept flooding in and flooding in and flooding in. You know what I mean? Because there's a massive line of people. And it took about a bloody hour. Maybe I'm exaggerating. It felt about an hour to do a full rotation. Yeah, it was. Yeah, don't do it. Don't do it. That's not good. In terms of where to eat, I mean, London's one of those cities. There's new places opening and closing all the time. But in London, you can find some amazing food. Where do I like? I'm trying to get into Gymkhana, which is... Dana White's favorite restaurant in London. I tried to book it 3 weeks in advance. Couldn't get in. Packed, sold out. So I'm like, any of the believers got any contacts at Gymkhana? Because I'm trying to get in there. You know what I mean? Gymkhana, give your boy a shout. Give me a table. Stop playing games. Come on.
I would imagine this is what most people assume a manager is for. Just can't you call someone and be like, yeah, like, hey, throw your weight around, get me in.
And that's what Rebecca said. She said, Michael, you've got a team of managers. You've got management here. You've got management there at Paradigm. You've got management with your acting agency. But I'm just not that dude. I will never, I don't call people and say, excuse me, I'm looking to get in here. Or can you do this for me? Can you do that? In fact, it's funny because Anthony, obviously, we were just in Vegas for UFC 300 and his manager was saying the same thing. I'm like, I do everything myself. And I said, what do you mean? I do everything for Anthony. Like, literally, I schedule his entire life. Yeah. I'm like, oh, well, that must be nice. And like, I do everything myself, probably because I'm a bit of a control freak. But also, I don't know. I don't like asking other people to do shit like that. But Jim Carner, if you just happen to be a fan of the show, hit me up, brother. We've got one more, Brian.
Sure do. This is a question about culture coming the other direction from Daz.
Oh, what up, Daz?
Hiya, fellas. Daz here from Bamber Bridge, Preston. You might know it, Bispin.
Know it well.
So, this week I booked flights to Vegas, booked my hotel, International Fight Week. I'm there for it. Now I'm just going to wait for a ticket release. Hope I can get some. You might notice the famous knockout in the background here. Put it in on purpose. But anyway, I just wanted to ask you two things. Firstly, what's the tipping culture in America? Is there like a certain amount, a percentage recommended? Or what's, I don't have a clue, never been. And secondly, while in Vegas, any recommendations of places I should go, eat food-wise, a decent bar, things to do? I know it's bouncing, just wondering if you've got anything that you think is must-see. All right, cheers. Hopefully bump into you and some other fighters in Fight Week as well.
Bamber Bridge, Bamber, bloody bridge. Mate, listen, when it comes to tip culture, it's going to annoy you because in the UK, we don't have a tipping culture, right? And I still argue with like friends and family when they come over because they don't want to tip. I'm like, you've got to tip, okay? They're like, oh, I don't know. I'm like, no, this is how they make a living. You have to tip. So I'd say as long as you didn't have a bad experience, you got to give 20%, you know? Again, what to do in Vegas? Depends on your budget. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can do a lot of fantastic stuff. Go on, Harrington. You were going to say something.
Well, I was going to say for drinks, you don't have to do 20%. A dollar or two per beverage, I think, is fine. If you're getting charged, you know, $15 for a beer, you don't have to give them a $3 tip.
Well, I do.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, it's $3.
Okay.
Yeah. Harrington didn't work in the service industry like the rest of us.
Where to go in Las Vegas? I mean, it depends what you're into, mate. It depends what you're into. Of course, I mean, listen, if you've never been to Las Vegas, it's going to blow your mind, right? I find it hell on earth walking up and down the strip and going through all the casinos and stuff like that. But when you've never been there, it's kind of an eye-opener and you look like a young lad, so you'll enjoy all of that stuff and just have a mooch about. There's nightclubs, there's shooting galleries, gun galleries, there's bloody desert. There's anything you want to do, you can do it pretty much in Las Vegas. Just depends what you're into, mate. You know, for me, when I go there these days, it's just work. It's just work, 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 and then find the quietest bar possible. Do you know what I mean? Just for a couple of little drinky poos before I hit the hay. Ain't going out. I don't do none of that shit anymore. No way. Had my fill. I hate it. I hate it. It's a production and a half. And the show's been a production and a half. Go on, Harrington.
Just a little recommendation for our friend Daz. I was going to say, when I was in my early 20s, I went to Vegas a lot, and I always spent time on the Strip. I didn't spend a lot of time in Old Vegas around Fremont Street. That's where I've been the last couple of times. I'm telling you, it's more fun. Everything's cheaper. Everything's cheaper. And there's way more, like, there's cool stuff you can do out on Fremont Street.
More
you can't
sticky.
Do.
Everything's right.
Yeah,
much
it's way
grosser.
Cheaper. You've got a better chance of getting robbed.
People insides on the street. Yeah, dude, that's definitely a place to go in Vegas.
You can find some meth addicted hooker if that's what you like. You know what I mean? You can get stabbed off a homeless person. You know? Yeah. Yeah, go down there. Things are cheaper. You know? For a reason. But that's the show, everybody. Thank you for watching. We'll be back on Monday.